This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
By the way, on the show.
One person said I should blame COVID for my mistake with regarding Miami and Florida State. I'm not going to do that because it's nothing to joke about. But the 425 says it's a totally understandable thing to confuse one Florida school with an overinflated sense of self-worth with another Florida school with an absolutely insufferable fan base. That's totally understandable to confuse those two schools for each other. So I'll go with that. It was an attempt at a joke that I was making. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is here, as he usually is on Fridays, for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, Bump, you ready?
Let's get it.
All right, question one. Second straight Sunday, we got no Seahawks. What should we be watching? What's the game to watch this Sunday in the NFL?
The game to watch this Sunday. I'm going to be looking at that Tennessee-Indianapolis game. This is pretty much for the division. I think whoever wins this game is going to win the division. Will Phillip Rivers play is a question. He got his foot stepped on or something like that. It's just, I expected the Colts to be good this year. I didn't expect them to be this good. They had a lot of young talent over there. You got good receivers, good running backs. Tennessee, again, we got to put some name on, some respect on Ryan Tannehill's name. 22 touchdowns, only 4 picks. The best running back in the game, in my opinion. I'm looking at Tennessee, Indianapolis. I'm also going to peek at Tampa Bay, Kansas City. Can Tom Brady bounce back? I mean, if they lose this game, they're 7-5. That's a place he hasn't been in a long time. Those are the two games that I'm going to look at. Can Tom Brady bounce back? Who's going to take, what is that, the AFC South with Tennessee? No, it's not AFC South. Are they even in the same division? Am I tripping right now, Danny? They said, yes, they are. It's the AFC South. Who's going to win that division? I'm glad that Phillip Rivers moved from San Diego or L.A. and now is playing for a team that can protect. I feel like Phillip Rivers' whole career, he's been not running for his life because he can't run, but moving in the pocket, taking big hits. I hope he's healthy to play. I think that's going to be a really good matchup.
Do you think the NFC or the AFC is the more interesting conference? The AFC has two clear top dogs in Pittsburgh and Kansas City, and then they've got a few really interesting teams. The Colts absolutely are an interesting team. They've got a good defense, and Rivers he's been making those. He looks bad, but he's always kind of looked bad because he throws it funky and it does.
Yeah,
look, he's playing like vintage Phillip Rivers. The Titans have a great running game. The Raiders are. Which conference do you think is more interesting?
Man, you know, I gotta go with the NFC just because you got 1, 2, 3, 4 teams at 7-3, another team at 7-4. 8-2 at the top. The Saints have a new quarterback, new system they're implementing. The LA Rams are a good football team. That defense is solid. They're good to go. When you have the two at the top at the AFC, you know that's going to be the 1-2. There's still a lot of things to be sorted out in the NFC. Every game's going to count towards the end of the season. I got to go with the NFC because you really can't call it at this point. You know, in the AFC, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, 1-2. And then we'll see what happens after that. But I'm going to NFC.
All right, question two. We just talked a little bit about Phillip Rivers. Last year, I thought there was a game where the Chargers played the Steelers. And I thought that if the Chargers win this game, they should get Pittsburgh's defense. Because this was after Roethlisberger was lost. And they were Duck and Mason Rudolph and all those guys. If the Chargers win this, they get Pittsburgh's defense. And if the Steelers win this game, they get Phillip Rivers because they didn't have a quarterback. And you could make a contender out of the two teams. I kind of feel that way with Joe Burrow right now because you talked about a quarterback stuck in a bad situation and they just...
Yeah.
Burrow might be that. He's out for the year now and he has a terrible knee injury, which, look, that was an awful offensive line. Like, it was... I don't want to say it was a matter of time because it's not like... But he kept getting clobbered. He was eventually going to get hurt. What do we do about him being stuck in Cincinnati?
Poor Joe. I don't even think he realizes the situation that he's in. You know, when I was little, my mom used to tell me all the time, it's a cold world out there. It's cold. But I was in my athletic bubble. I'd go to school. I'd go to practice. I'd come back. I'd repeat. And I'm like, Mom, what are you talking about? And then as I grow up, I'm an adult. I'm like, man, Mom's is right. It's cold out here. Joe Burrow doesn't know how cold this locker room is. He doesn't know how cold this organization is because that's all he knows. That's all he knows. I read an article saying that the Bengals locker room is compared to a college locker room. I don't know exactly what that means. My locker room was awesome. I had a great time in my locker room. But the culture is jacked up there. And now you're asking this young man to come in and kind of change the culture or help in changing the culture. And he's coming from a culture where they did nothing but win. So he's in a weird place. I think him being injured is going to allow him to step back and kind of really observe and see what it's like from the outside looking in and really allow him to adjust, I guess, his approach to changing this culture. But Joe Burrow, man, bless you. I hope you heal. I hope you figure this thing out. There's a lot of responsibility lying on this dude.
When you hear that it's worse than a college locker room, what do you think? How do you think that manifests itself? Is it dudes just thinking about their paychecks? Is it a lack of camaraderie? Like, what do you think that would indicate?
I would think it's drama. Drama, right? Because in a college locker room, what's going on? Oh, you're talking to my girl, you know, or we saw you at a party, you were doing this. Like, it's just bickering, little stuff like that. So maybe that's what's going on. They also said before Dunlap left the Bengals, guys were disassociating themselves with Carlos because he had a bad reputation with other coaches. That's like little drama. This is a job. You're professionals. You show up, you do your job. You don't have to be friends with everybody. But when you're on the football field, we're in the locker room, you're in the film room, you're a team. So it sounds like they're missing the professionalism out of this. Everyone doesn't have to like each other, but you have to work with each other. But when you're winning, everyone loves each other. You're looking at a franchise that's been losing for a while. So it's hard for guys really to buy in to what's going on.
That was an interesting detail in the story. Is on Bleacher Report, because Carlos Dunlap, he was less than enthusiastic in going back into a game that they were losing after they'd sat him for a quarter. What it sounded like is that he didn't want to go in for mop-up time. When they sat him when the game meant something, and when it was still in doubt, he wasn't playing for an entire quarter, and he wasn't going to go in at the end. He wasn't thrilled about that. The coaching staff calls him out in front of everybody and kind of made an example of him instead of working it out.
Yeah.
And then that turned guys against Dunlap. And you definitely saw that at the end, because Dunlap, after he was basically left out of the rotation after that, posted on Twitter after the game a want ad for his house, basically saying, hey, does anybody want to get here? Move me out of here. And a couple of the players responded, one of them said, this is sucker stuff, Los, was one of his teammates said. And you have guys that are trying to shame a teammate. Carlos Dunlap's been on that team for 10 years. And that team has been bad and had probably a less than desirable culture and had some funky stuff going on. And he hasn't acted up before. I'm willing to say that I probably think that a guy like Carlos Dunlap was pushed to that. He didn't start acting up because he's a young, entitled, and spoiled player. Like, he didn't like how those guys were treating. I tend to say that if you shame a veteran like that, that's probably not the best way to go about things if you're a coaching staff.
Heck no, a vet, 10 years in the game. He's been here longer than some of you coaches. Like, I heard a story about Jim Brown. All right, now, Dunlap is not Jim Brown. Jim Brown is in a class of his own. But Jim Brown goes out the night before. I guess they're supposed to get on the bus, let's say 10 o'clock. And he shows up 20 minutes late. It's him and several other dudes, two or three guys. They get on the bus, and the coach rips everyone else a new one but Jim Brown. Why? Because he's the veteran. He knows. He made a mistake. But it's like at some point, you've been there so long, you've earned some type of a force field around you to where they're going to approach you a bit differently than they approach the younger guys. That's what should have happened. You don't shame the 10-year vet in front of everybody. You pull him to the side. Everyone knows he messed up. You pull him to the side, and you handle it. You talk to him like men, face-to-face. So I don't like that approach. That's one of the many things that's wrong with that organization.
Question 3. What player worries you most on the Philadelphia Eagles, Bob?
The Eagles. I got to go to their tight ends. Their tight ends make this offense go. They got Goddard and Rodgers. Rodgers is actually, I believe, the second leading receiver on the team. And why the tight ends concern me, We know the Hawks like to run that cover three scheme. Where do you hit a cover three scheme? You hit them on the flats if you can out leverage and the seams. And Goddard and Rodgers do a great job working the seams. If they can get a run game going and get linebackers to bite up, and Carson Wentz can get the ball out quickly to their tight ends, and they play a lot of two tight end sets, I think the Hawks would be able to handle them. But those are the two guys that concern me the most.
How about the quarterback? Hey, the quarterback, Carson Wentz?
Carson Wentz, that's what messes me up about him, because he can still play. You see the arm strength. He's mobile, but he's going to make 3 to 4 poor decisions. And the Hawks have to jump on those poor decisions and turn the ball over, because we haven't seen that in a few weeks.
It'll be very interesting to see. It's too bad we're not going to have a full house. For a lot of reasons, you're not going to have fans and fans full there in Philadelphia for this game, because there's nothing quite like when the city of Philadelphia turns on one of its teams, and that city hates the Philadelphia Eagles right now. Like, it's one of the truly unique, like, they truly can load their own teams with an intensity that none of us can imagine. They hate Doug Peterson, and they hate Carson Wentz right now. And it would be on a Monday night, and they're still got a theoretical shot at the division, and people would be showing up just to boo the first mistake those guys have made.
Philly, Philly, Philly. Didn't they boo Santa one year and then throw batteries at people? You're booing Santa?
Yeah.
Come on, man. You got
you know what, though? Rough. And that is Blue 42, brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The story about the Santa is actually pretty funny, though. Because I think the Santa deserved to get booed.
Enlighten me. Give me the details of that.
This is in the 1970s, and it was a replacement Santa. The Santa that they'd had scheduled for this halftime ceremony didn't show up, so they got a Santa out of the crowd, and this Santa was somewhat disheveled looking, and he was drunk. So they brought the disheveled drunken Santa out onto the field, and yes, I believe there was snow in the stadium, so I believe some snowballs were thrown, and I believe that then he was booed, because the story that I read about it was like, look, first of all, it was a long time ago, and second of all, the bum had it coming. Like, he deserved to get booed, which is like
what did he do, though? Did he not wave properly? Like, what forced these people to throw snowballs at a Santa? Did he stumble? I don't understand why you would boo Santa like that.
I imagine that he looked like Dan Aykroyd in Trading Places when he's the Santa, like, people are like, I don't want my kids seeing this drunken sot of a Santa Claus that's out there. But no, Philly is a different place, man. It is, and it is one of the truly uniquely American cities in that way. Like, it has its own sporting personality. The times and the batteries, I think there was Michael Irvin suffered a bad neck injury there, and I believe stuff was thrown at the stretcher. I think he was stretchered off, and maybe even in the neck brace. And I think that was terrible. But I always hate that happens in every city, like that. Those sort of things, like not in Seattle. Well, but when Bowman, you remember when Navarro Bowman in the NFC Championship game, because he suffered that terrible knee injury, and he left on a stretcher, and somebody threw popcorn as he was leaving the field. And I guess what I would say is, not that it happens in every city. Every devoted fan base has idiots in it. Like, every devoted fan base has a couple people who act atypically. And for the most part, Philly fans, they're rough on their own team. But they're good fans, and I've been to a number of games there. But it is funny that we do have the reputation that they would boo Santa, and they will. They turn on their own team like nothing I've ever seen. Like, that's the one thing that stands out. It's not how bad they are to opponents; it's how mean they are to their own teams. Like, they just won a Super Bowl like 3 years ago. They should still be in the hangover. Instead, they're like, "Boo! Guys are terrible. Put Hurts in there."
And what's their motto? The city of brotherly love. Is that what they call Philly? Liars.
Yes. Complete liars. That is a complete misnomer. It shouldn't be there at all. It is Danny Gallant. We've got Washington Wednesday, and the Huskies have an opponent. They're going to be playing the Utes. We'll talk to Mike Varell about that from the Seattle Times. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. We've been saying things that we're thankful for. I had listed I'm thankful for Seattle's run for that. They've abandoned that, sort of established the run and opened up the throttle on this offense earlier in the game. Bump, you provided thanks to sort of the more communal, the camaraderie that exists within the wide receiver group, especially that DK Metcalf has been able to emerge as a star while Tyler Lockett remains your number one threat and David Moore is making without any glimpse of somebody wanting the ball more or feeling their shine's eclipsed. I'd also like to offer thanks to the dysfunction of the Cincinnati Bengals. We talked about that in this last segment. Like, thank you to the Bengals that they traded Carlos. They didn't just trade Carlos Dunlap for a fifth round pick, but they took back BJ Finney. Like, they took back a guy that wasn't playing here at all to provide Carlos Dunlap, who honestly right now I think is having a huge impact, and I'm really excited about the role he's going to play. He could turn out to be one of the most important additions for this team if it's able to make a playoff run, because he looks like he fits great with this team.
Yes, it's him or Jamal Adams at this point. And Adams is doing exactly what we expected him to do. All right, he's in the box. He's getting pressure on the quarterback. He leads the team in sacks, 5.5. Dunlap was kind of like, okay, let's see what we get out of him. You know, he has been playing in Cincinnati. What's going on there? We're finding out is his relationship with the coaches. They were moving on. They wanted to go younger. When they signed Carlos Dunlap, I said, all right, if we get 6 sacks out of him, that's a win. He's trending right now. I think Jamal Adams is the long-run pick. He'll be here for a while. Hopefully, he is a Pro Bowler. But Dunlap might be most important because it was all about shoring up that defensive line. I think without Jamal Adams, the secondary is okay. Because you think of Jamal Adams, how many times do you see him drop into a zone, Danny? How many times do you see him play a half of the field or the deep third? That's not what he's here to do. He's here to cause havoc. So I think the secondary would have been decent without Jamal Adams. But then you take a hit on getting pressure on the quarterback. You can flip those two. Is Jamal or is Dunlap? And Jamal has given instant satisfaction when it comes to his play. And so is Dunlap. And as this thing goes along, if Dunlap continues to get pressure and sacks on the quarterback, it could be clear-cut Dunlap. But Jamal Adams, Carlos, take them both.
Yeah, it's been a work in progress. Seattle's initial plan, they had to adjust. They were hoping to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. And when they didn't, they adjusted. And one of the things they did was trade for Jamal Adams. And another thing they did is leave the door open for an opportunity, which is exactly what they got with Carlos Dunlap. Another thing I'm thankful for, I don't want to say I'm thankful for the lack of crowds, because every one of us is missing that about sports. It's different. And I think that the players are trying as hard as they can, and they're putting out a really good product. I miss the live atmosphere, like not just being there, but watching a game in front of a live crowd, a sold out crowd in the NFL is different. You can feel the emphasis, you can feel the momentum shift. Watching that Seattle game, it's not like I don't know what Lumen Field now, CenturyLink Field, would have been like with that sack that Dunlap had at the end of the Arizona game. I do know what it would be like. It would be like what it sounded like when Tony Romo botched the extra point or botched the field goal in that playoff game, or maybe not quite what Beast Quake felt like, but one of those moments when it is just sheer energy that's in that stadium. I'm missing that. But I'm thankful for the on-field technology that's allowing us to hear some of the stuff that's being said on the field.
Yes, I love that. I'm one of the lucky few. When the Hawks are at home, I get to go to the stadium and watch the game. And yes, I miss the moments where the 12s are out there. Like you mentioned, the sack. Imagine that drive against Minnesota, the stop against New England. That place would be rocking, man. But because they're not there, I get to hear Russell Wilson celebrate. I get to hear the sidelines going back and forth. That stuff gives me chills, Danny. Like, that's what I miss about playing football, is being in the game and those interactions. I tell people all the time, there could be 11 conversations going on that field at one time. and you don't know what's being said. And so I get to hear the emotion. I get to hear the pads popping. So selfishly, I'm enjoying that part of it, but I'm missing the crowd for sure. I want to be in a big moment. You know, what do fans do in big moments? You become best friends with the most random person in the world when a big play is made. You guys are slapping hands. You want a beer? Yeah, you get a beer. Hey, now you're cool. You leave each other, you'll never see that person again. But for those, 60 minutes, 3.5 hours if we're talking about a football game, man, you're just connecting with people. And that's what I feel like everyone's missing too right now, connecting with people, whether it be in stadiums or just out in the world.
Those moments when you hug strangers. It only happens in sports. I can tell you the last time it happened for me was Washington played Arizona. I think it's 2007. It's the game where Washington won. Mason Foster picked a pass off. Nick Foles actually threw it for Arizona, scooped it off. Washington played horrible. They played awful the whole game, and they win on this ball that goes off a receiver's foot. They thought it hit the ground. It didn't. It scored. Jumped into a stranger's arms. Like, couldn't believe it happened. We also get opportunities to hear stuff like this. This is from the Colts game when the Colts were in the midst of getting six holding penalties on one possession in the fourth quarter. Man. You get to hear Philip Rivers give his offensive lineman an earful.
And it is against Indy.
What are you doing?
Because Rivers doesn't curse. And somebody thought it was the offensive lineman yelling at himself saying this, like the stupid, I can't believe, what are you doing? But I like to think it was red-faced Philip Rivers. Let's hear it one more time.
And it is against him.
What are you doing?
That's definitely Philip Rivers. That is Philip Rivers. He's scolding his kid. Yes. Told you not to pick that up, man.
It was unbelievable watching that. But you're getting those moments to hear it, whether it's audibles for James Harden, and then the fact that it's an ISO run. You're like, oh, that's perfect. Like, somebody's got a sense of humor there. Like, you're not going to pass it on James Harden. Heck no. You're absolutely going to run an ISO running play. You can text in 710-710. What are you thankful for? It can be anything. It can be serious. It can be about football. We'll read some of those. That'll be something that's fun to do over the rest of the show. It is Wednesday. Washington is going to play. It's not the Apple Cup, not the game that we're planning for. They're going to take on the Utah Utes. We're going to bring in Mike Varell of the Seattle Times next to talk to him about what Washington's preparation looks like for this game. That's ahead.
Washington Wednesdays, brought to you by Star Rentals, preferred supplier to the West's best contractors.
It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bump is sitting in for Paul Gallant this week, who's on vacation. He'll be back on Monday. And right now, we didn't think we were going to have a Washington Wednesday because the Apple Cup had been called off. But lo and behold, the Huskies do have a game, and we're joined now by Mike Varell of the Seattle Times, who's with us. And Mike, it looks like the Huskies actually have a date after having the Apple Cup called off.
Yeah, I mean, you never really know until you show up at the stadium, but they have a game scheduled. That's what we know today.
They're going to be taking on Utah. Utah's one of the tougher teams, just the way that they play defense. Have you gotten a sense of how good their team is this year? Because they've had a number of games canceled as well.
Yeah, I don't think Utah probably doesn't know how good they are at this point. Obviously, they had a disappointing loss against USC, and like you said, their first two games were canceled because of COVID issues in their program. They've got a whole lot of turnover. They had 7 players drafted last year, so a lot of that secondary that was excellent is gone. Their quarterback and running back from last year is gone, so a lot of new faces. They're going to have a transfer from South Carolina, Jake Bentley, starting at quarterback on Saturday. It is a very different program right now and a very different roster that they're trotting out. So, I mean, they've got that reputation, like you said, of being this physical group, and certainly a group that wore down UW in the fourth quarter last season. But it's not the same team, so we'll have to see what group of Utes comes out on Saturday.
What are your thoughts on Dylan Morris so far? You mean coming off of Jake Browning, who had a long career there, then Jacob Eason. He's like a mix between the two, I feel like. What are your thoughts on Dylan Morris so far?
Yeah, I mean, he's done well. Obviously, the numbers are not going to jump off of the page too much, but he's doing exactly what Jimmy Lake wants him to do, which is to make the throws he needs to make to lead that team, to avoid mistakes, avoid turnovers, get them in and out of good and bad plays in terms of run checks. He's been sacked once, and that was him running out of bounds, but he wasn't really sacked. He's done some things that I think were a little bit surprising even. He's a little bit more mobile than I think people give him credit for. He does a really good job of maneuvering the pocket. And, you know, people look at his size, you know, 6 foot, and maybe that's generous. And they figure he's an undersized guy. Maybe he can't really throw it around. The guy has a cannon for an arm. And that's always been the case, but I feel like that's always a little bit undervalued with a guy like that. So definitely a lot to be excited about. And we'll see just as the season goes on how much they trust him to really open it up.
I want to ask you about their defense in just a second, because they've had two linebackers who weren't that highly touted as either prospects or necessarily coming into the season who played really well. But first, their offense, I was really skeptical of the John Donovan hire. I would have described it as underwhelming, and a guy who'd been an assistant in the NFL for a couple years after being let go from Penn State. I've been really impressed with how they've looked. They've got seems that they're going and willing to play very heavy. They have a big line up front. They use tight ends. They've run the ball a lot, but it's looked really good. What have your impressions of their offense been?
I think it just makes sense. I think it fits the personnel that they have right now. I mean, they've got legitimately four running backs that they really trust, which is an incredible luxury and something you don't see very much of. And like you mentioned, their offensive line is just huge. It's massive. You're bringing MJ Ali in at left guard, who's 355 pounds. Henry Bainavalu at right guard, who's 335. I mean, they are massive road graders, and they're built to do what they're doing, which is to establish the run. And in that last game, of course, I mean, it was a very impressive showing, being able to open it up with play action off of that. They knew that they could expose Arizona, and that's what they did. I think the only piece right now to the puzzle that isn't there is just that they've had some drops in terms of their wide receivers. But they're actually really excited about that group, too, and they've got a lot of young, talented wide receivers. But if you look at, like I said, the line, the running backs, the tight end, and Kate Otten, they're built to wear you down and work you with play action, and that's what they've been doing. So I think if you're John Donovan, it just makes a lot of sense, and it seems like this offense is tailored to who they have to try to be successful.
Now, I will ask about the defense. Tupuola-Fatui, Zion Tupuola-Fatui, who everybody's calling ZTF, has gotten off to a really hot start rushing off the edge. He wasn't even necessarily the first guy up at that pass rusher. Joe Tryon opted out, and they've had some injuries there. Did the Huskies expect this kind of pressure to come from him?
Jimmy Lake says that he expected Zion to have a big season. He said he showed it all through fall camp. But what's interesting to me is the fact that it's not like this kid hadn't played. I mean, he was a backup, but he did play. He rotated in throughout last season. And we didn't see this. We didn't see this kind of explosion coming from him. So, I mean, that part has been a really pleasant surprise for fans and I think for media and people who weren't sure what they were going to get from him. But obviously a big 6'3", 280-pound dude with great get-off. And you talk to his teammates, and they've said, this dude has had it since the beginning. Since the first day he came here, people knew that he had something in terms of the juice, the explosiveness, and now he's starting to show it. And without Leatu Latu, who's been down, he's got to be that guy. So, I mean, winning Pac-12 Defensive Lineman of the Week 2 weeks in a row, that's very impressive for your first two career starts. But that's what they're going to need from him going forward as well.
How disappointed are you about the Apple Cup not being played? And two, do you think they reschedule this thing eventually or just call it a loss?
It's disappointing. I mean, obviously, I'm from the Midwest originally, so it's hard to really gauge. I know how much this means to the people who live here and the people who grew up around here and the alums. And I think, you know, they're the ones that can really feel that the most. But, you know, it's obviously a massive loss, and it's nice that UW gets to play a football game this weekend. But in terms of rescheduling it, I mean, they've got a couple options. If UW's not playing in the Pac-12 title game on December 18th, I would totally expect the game to be played the next day on the 19th. There would be no reason not to do that. And if that's not the case, I mean, people have thrown around ideas if they could just, you know, schedule a game after the season to get this game in. I don't know what they'll do, but I know that these two athletic directors, Jen Cohen and Pat Shunn, understand the importance of the game, understand how much people care about it. And I don't see a downside to wanting to get this game in. Even if you have to throw it in December, this is a game people want to see. I think this is a game that TV would be happy to broadcast nationally. So I think they'll try, and I don't know if it's possible. COVID's always messing things up, but I think they'll try.
Yeah, I think everybody hopes that they will be able to get the game in one way or the other. One game was could have happened or was potentially debated was the BYU playing Washington. There's been a lot of back and forth about what could have occurred. Ultimately, it would have been moot because with Utah playing Arizona State and that game being called off, the Pac-12 would have dictated that priority would have been placed on giving Utah an opponent. But what's your understanding? BYU is trying to say they were ready to and wanted to play this game. It sounds to me like they really didn't. They wanted to wait and see about the rankings, and if it was going to be played, they wanted it played in Provo. Is that correct? What's your understanding, Mike, of how the discussions went?
My understanding, what I know happened, is that on Saturday, before the Apple Cup was canceled, but there was obviously a sense that it would be, UW reached out to BYU about the possibility of a game. And Saturday going into Sunday, UW was told that BYU wanted to wait for Tuesday for the CFP rankings to really understand if they needed a game like that or if they could kind of sit pretty. After that, I'm not sure exactly what happened with the discussions and how those, and of course, lots of stories came out, but that is true. That's what happened early in those negotiations. And I think the BYU folks don't want to acknowledge that for whatever reason. If I were BYU in this situation, I don't blame them for not necessarily wanting to play UW. You could argue that they couldn't get a lot out of it necessarily. And if they lose, of course, that's a big issue. But when you say, you know, any team, any time, any place, it's just an unfortunate tagline to hang your hat on because that's not what you're going to be about. So I don't really understand. I really don't understand what the controversy is. I mean, if you put that on your headband and then you decide that you don't want to play the game, you're going to have to answer a couple questions.
It's true. Yeah. It's totally true. The way that they really screwed up, though, Mike, because it's possible that, hey, if they had been ranked in the top 12 or they liked where their ranking was, it wouldn't have benefited them. And maybe all that's true. But here's the thing is they could have looked like the tough guy. The way things played out, if they'd come out and said, heck yeah, we'll come and play. And then it comes out that, well, the Utah-Arizona State games. So BYU wouldn't have had to play the game, and they could have got the benefit of looking tough without taking any risk. And now everybody sees that, like, oh, not only do you not get to play the game and get a potential advantage of it, but now you kind of get to look like, yeah, your head. It's all talk on your headband, no show. Big hat, no cattle.
I totally agree with that. And I've gotten, you know, I wrote a story about it a day or two ago, and since then I've been getting sort of a stream of BYU emails that were not extremely pleased. But that's my whole take is, the Pac-12 criteria is really unfortunate for scheduling non-conference games because the game can be pulled out on Thursday if a different Pac-12 team becomes available. But if you're BYU and you want to show that you're trying to schedule the toughest teams and you're trying to strengthen your schedule, why not schedule this game? And if it's canceled, you practice for 2 days, not a huge deal, and you showed the country, hey, we wanted to make this happen. What's the downside of that? I'm confused as to why that would have been a bad thing or an embarrassing thing for BYU. So that's the part I don't really get.
Yeah, Mike, like my running back coach in college used to say, if you're scared, just say you're scared, and I respect you more. I think BYU should have just said, we don't want the smoke, we don't want none of that. But, Mike, what are some names? You know, I like looking at maybe some walk-ons or some freshmen that are surprising you. Any names over there at UW that we should be looking after that people aren't really talking about?
Yeah, I mean, they're playing some freshmen there, that's for sure. I mean, Savelle Smalls is a name everybody knows, but, you know, a former five-star prospect who's, you know, now playing a lot at outside linebacker. We talked about, you know, Latu, who is going to be a starting outside linebacker for them, has been injured. And because of that, you've got a couple of freshmen, Savelle Smalls and Cooper McDonald, that are playing legitimate snaps at the outside linebacker spot. You've got a couple wide receivers in the same boat with Jalen McMillan and Roma Donze, who've struggled a little bit with drops in the first couple of weeks. But it appears that they've got the trust of this team and are going to be put in positions to really make plays. In terms of walk-ons, there aren't guys who are really playing right now that are walk-ons currently, but all throughout this roster, it's guys that are former walk-ons that are getting it done. Eddie Ulofucio, their starting inside linebacker, who is a stud, is a former walk-on from Alaska. And then Ryan Bowman, a starting outside linebacker who had a sack last week and is one of their senior leaders, also a former walk-on. So this program has really built itself and has established a reputation on nurturing those guys and giving those guys opportunities.
He is Mike Varell. You can read his dispatches in the Seattle Times, in the words of the immortal Graz. Mike, we always enjoy talking to you. We hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and we appreciate you taking the time today.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That was Mike Varell here with our Washington Wednesday report there. The Huskies taking on Utah. That is Saturday at 7:30. It's always tough to put your finger on exactly what's annoying about Aaron Rodgers, because he's not a bad dude. He's just annoying. But I think we've got the perfect way to show you why he's annoying. The perfect example. That's coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
It was not all a dream. Danny and Gallant here. Michael Bumpus sitting in as he has all week. It's been a really good time. We've got a couple pieces of news. The first one is that Nick Saban has tested positive for COVID-19. That was announced by Alabama. He is experiencing mild symptoms. According to the school, he will isolate and quarantine. People might remember earlier this year when there was a report that he had tested positive. It turned out to be a false positive, and he was back coaching even that week. It sounds like this time it is, as I said, a positive test, and he is experiencing mild symptoms. So best wishes to Alabama's coach. And the other piece of news is that Diego Maradona, who, I mean, he was the best soccer player in the world when I was growing up. That guy was incredible for Argentina, has died at the age of 60. He lived a lot of life in those 60 years. That man had an aggressive appetite for just about everything, but I'm seeing clips of some of his most incredible goals, and he played at a different speed as everybody when he was a dominant player.
For people who don't understand who Maradona is, now, in football, when you take somebody up top, a deep pass, what do you say? Oh, you got mossed, right? There's something called the Maradona spin. It's a soccer move that when you're a kid, that's what you – it's one of the first moves you learn, the Maradona spin. Like, that's how important he was to this game. He's one of his infamous plays was the handball. He put his hand up and pretended like he headed the ball in, used his hand. They didn't have the technology we have today. He just impacted the game. Small dude as well. Not a very big guy. Got it done. Maradona, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace to Diego Maradona, Argentine great. Aaron Rodgers, I don't want to say he's like a divisive figure or anything, because he's one of our villains. Seattle, for the most part, doesn't care for Aaron Rodgers. And it's hard to pinpoint why. I would say the one thing that he has done is he's taken a couple of passive-aggressive shots at Russell Wilson. He made a reference to God being a Packers fan after a game against the Seahawks. People took that, and I think it was. I think it was a little it was snide toward Russell Wilson. He's a little bit aloof, but in general, the Packers and the Seahawks have been rivals in the conference for 10 years, and there's even a little bit of history between the two franchises going back before that, and Rodgers was considered the best quarterback in the league when Russell came into the league, so there's always been a little bit of friction. When people ask me, though, Aaron Rodgers isn't a bad dude. He was great with Jim. In a one-on-one interview, he can be funny. He's got a wry sense of humor. I know someone who was friends with him when he was in college and has known him through the years, and is like he's a really good guy. But I've always the way his quarterback persona. So this isn't about who he is personally, but his public quarterback persona, I find obnoxious. Like I really do. I think he's got this subtle, but it's always hard for me to describe exactly what it is. Like he's snide, kind of aloof. And there's just he knows how good he is, and he kind of resents if you don't recognize his greatness. Like, it's just a little, he's smug. He is a smug, smug, incredibly great football player.
He's a good football player.
Yes, he
Dude
is.
Dude can toss a rock, yes. Flicks his wrist, doesn't even use his lower body at times.
Yes.
Some of the stuff he does, he's ahead of the game. But I think it all starts with his mustache, Danny. It's that mustache. You look at him, you see the mustache. How many dudes you know with that mustache? I don't know many guys with that mustache. And it starts there, and it's the way he looks at people. It's the way he's the guy who walks into a party and like, hey, I'm here. It's me. I'm here. You know, go get me a drink. It seems like he, and I could be wrong. I could be totally off about Aaron Rodgers, but it seems like he doesn't tip the waitress well. It seems like he asked for a specific type of water. Like, no, this water, I need water from the springs of somewhere, and I need it to be at this temperature. It seems like he demands a lot. But he also backs it up with his play, man. Dude's a baller. So I don't know. I don't know Aaron Rodgers. We're making assumptions here. But my perception is my reality, so I'm just going to roll with it. I think Aaron Rodgers is not a very fun person to hang around.
Now, he was on a podcast, or maybe it's a radio show. It's Pat McAfee's show, who is the former Colts punter. Pat is extremely entertaining. He is very much into the performance art of whether it's a radio or a podcast or whatever he does. But he's also kind of a bro. Like, he's the gold chain on the outside of his t-shirt. He's got a little bit of bro tendencies. And he's there with AJ Hawk, who is a former linebacker who people remember, who is puffing on a cigar. And the reason I want to say that, because I want to set the scene, they're talking to Aaron Rodgers, who is drinking some sort of liquor in a cup. He's something in a cup with ice cubes that's clinking there. This seems like a sophisticated young men talking about things. He's wearing a beanie. And Aaron Rodgers epitomizes why I find him to be such a smug and unlikable public persona here as he starts talking about no-look passes.
Late in the game, had a, you know, they wouldn't show it because I play for the Packers, but I had a pretty sweet no-looker to Devontae on the last drive that I'd kind of set up for a few plays. Because Darius is so athletic side to side, he loves reading your eyes, and I just kind of came back and looked left. And then looked outside him on the right and threw it behind him to.
Ooh, go get him! Hey, I'm so thankful Patrick Mahomes brought that into the NFL.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Good for him.
Yeah, I know. Since none of us have been doing it for a long time.
Lame! That's such a lame thing. Bunch of, and it's rich of me to criticize anyone for being like cackling in the background. Because I know I'm obnoxious. But. That's really obnoxious.
Yeah, because nobody's been doing that for a long time. Let me sit here while you puff your cigar, and I'll drink my high-priced sipping liquor. God!
Oh. But you know what it is, Danny? Like, Danny, I would describe myself and the people I hang out with as humble people. We're humble guys, like to have fun. But when we're smoking cigars and drinking a little drink, we get a little loose, man. We start talking a little stuff. Like, hey, man, you remember that game against SC when I hit him for 120? You remember that? Yeah, I remember that. You remember this game? And you start going back and forth. So I can appreciate him being loose in that environment. You just can't be loose around everybody. And now his looseness in that situation just reassured everybody what they thought about him. So he's got to be more strategic with his looseness.
And this will be an open invitation to everybody listening. If I ever say something like, I had a sweet no-looker, I had a sweet no-looker to Devontae, but they didn't show it because I'm a Packer, as if his greatness has somehow been under-acknowledged by anyone. Oh, yeah, Aaron Rodgers doesn't get enough exposure. Like, he really doesn't get – everybody talks about how great you are. You've won MVP awards, but we didn't properly genuflect in front of your sweet no-looker. Like – you can open hand slap me in the face if that ever happens. A sweet no-looker.
God, Danny, I'm sure you had a day at LA Fitness where you were controlling the rock in a 5-on-5, and you had a sweet no-looker.
No!
And you probably said, hey, that was sweet, huh?
Yeah, you, like you that? See that? Yeah, like Magic was the first one to do that. I've been doing that for years here in these pickup games at LA Fitness. It is Danny and Gallant. Things that we're thankful for today. I'm thankful to be working with Michael Bumpus. Thankful to have DJ Wilder here. Thankful that all you guys are listening. We'll keep going and talk about the Seahawks as they get ready to take on the Eagles. That's coming up next.